Tradition 11. Each partner best conveys his or her beliefs and philosophy by attraction rather than promotion. Anonymity is a valuable asset to the marriage or relationship. Accepting others as they are and trying to live the best we can, one day at a time, is applying the silver and golden rules all at the same time. I try to live my program instead of trying to teach or preach it. You know, I know from a little kid on that what people do makes a bigger impression than what they say. You know, people can tell you don't smoke, but when you're sitting there smoking in front of your kids the whole darn time, it doesn't have much effect, you know. They can tell you don't do this, but when you see them do that, it takes away. So what you do is more important than what you say. So I try to put my program into action, not just talking the talk, but walking the walk. Now, the first time that I saw this at work was with Jennifer. And Jennifer had been in the program just a short period of time, and we were taking turns. Back, remember when they had the gas crisis before? They said there wasn't any gas. That was when they first started increasing the prices on the gas they didn't have, but once they got the price up, they had the gas. Remember that? Well, we were going to meetings all over the county, and so we were carpooling. And it was Jennifer's turn to take us to the meeting that night. And she called me and she said, the weather says that we're probably going to have a sleet tonight. And she said, you know, I don't have any insurance. And I said, that's all right, honey. I've asked God, and He's going with us. You don't have to worry about it. And she said she got off the phone and went, whoopee-doo, you know. And so we went on to the meeting, and sure enough, when we came out of the meeting that night, there was a real shield of ice on the roads. And we were at the old 120 half group, so we had to go over to the 630, to the interstate there, to get on. And there's a big overpass there right after you get on. And as we came up to the top of the overpass, all the cars below us were just going every which way. You saw lights going every way. And so she did the normal thing, panicked, slamming on the brakes. Now we are joining the cars in this nice spiral, you know. And I said to her, Jennifer, turn in the direction of your slide. And I didn't yell it. I said it really calm. But she was scared, and she couldn't, it wasn't registering. And so I told her again, turn in the direction of your slide. And finally I got the wheel, and I turned just as our wheels were up on the edge of the overpass. And we stopped. And we're there. And we're hearing all this wham, 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 wham all around us. And we look at each other, and I said, are y'all okay? And her little girl in the back seat said, I gotta pee. And we, the police came in a few minutes. We'd backed down off of the deal. And the police said, who'd you hit or who hit you? And we said, nobody. And the cops said, well, what are y'all doing here? And I said, waiting for traffic to clear, you know, so we can get out. And we're sitting there, and Jennifer began to cry. And she looked at me and she said, I want your God. She said, I want a God that's going to take care of me. When you said God's going to go with us and take care of us, she said, I didn't believe. She said, I want to believe. I want your God, you know. And that was the night she came to believe that God would do all those things and He would take care of her. And that was, you know, and it was, you know, it wasn't anything I planned that night, you know, because I just knew that God was going to go with us. You know, because I believed, then she could believe. People also watch you when you're doing rotten things, you know. It's like my sister one day, we're driving along in the car and a guy swerved in front of us and Dorothy went, and I said, what is that? She said, well, isn't that what you do? See, you can show them the wrong thing to do too, you know. That was something she'd learned from me. Another thing that I found is praying with those I sponsor. I think that's real important. You know, when people I love or people I'm sponsoring or having problems or whatever, I believe in praying together with them. And so many times, a lot of times they'll call and they're hurting and I'll say, just close your eyes now and let's get together and let's just pray together. You know, because wherever two or more are joined, there you are. You know, when the God in me touches the God in you, that makes a really strong bond. And I've noticed that we pass that on too. You know, that's the thing. It was all passed on. Passed on by my sponsor to me, and I try to pass it on to those I sponsor. I don't try to promote the program. I was an evangelist for a while, especially in the beginning. You know, I held in my office one day at a time meetings in the morning. I'd have everybody gather up there in our little coffee room, and I would read to them out of the ODAT and explain to them what they should do each morning, you know, as far as prayer and meditation. And I was doing, I had it really nice there for a while until I mentioned my sponsor I was doing this. And then that stopped all that, you know. Everybody got off the hook there. I went around with the 20 questions, the pamphlet from AA, and everyone that I thought needed it in the company, I put one on their desk. Really endeared myself to a lot of people. One was my immediate supervisor, the vice president, and at that time, and he said, "What the hell do you mean by this?" I said, "Well, God knows, Earl, you come back drunk every day from lunch, and you have to hide you out over here in the office." Maybe it wasn't the most tactful thing to say. And then we had the company attorney. You know, if you didn't get a decision before 11, kiss it goodbye. You know, because Bill was never in any great shape when he came back from lunch. You know, he was in there farting and sleep with his feet on the desk. I mean, we knew he had a problem, you know. And I was thrilled. It was 3, 4, 5, 6 years later, I saw him finally make it through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he's been here ever since. That I can't tell you how thrilled I was to see that man finally make it. I hope Earl made it somewhere. But he didn't make it here. But it's been a real journey in that I did all the things wrong. So that's what I'm telling you. You know, I've tried all these things and I have done it wrong. You know, that's like the anonymity, you know. I blew Jennifer's anonymity really big one time. Didn't even know I was doing it at the time. You know how we are. We're so dingy. And all I did was I saw her husband and I said, "Tell Jennifer we missed her at the meeting last night." Sounds harmless, doesn't it? It says, "Don't tell who you see here." Well, I told who I didn't see there. You know, but that sort of works too, because he knew he saw Jennifer and she said she was leaving for the meeting. And when he got back home, Jennifer was in bed. She didn't say she didn't go to the meeting. Wonder where Jennifer was. He went out and got drunk thinking about that. You know, well, he got drunk on the weekends anyway back then. But it still, you know, it gave her, she had to hassle with all of that. And the bottom line was a neighbor's husband had died. And she went down to be with the neighbors, never made it to the meeting. Didn't have a chance to tell him. It was one of those little simple, harmless, so-called things, but it caused her grief. So I learned, don't say who's not at the meeting either. You know, you don't say who's there, don't say who's not there. And I always get tickled because when I would meet people in the mall or something with my sister and she would say to me, "Is that one of your people?" I'd say, "I don't know, I couldn't tell you if it was." You know, because it's not mine, it's yours to break. I mean, not mine. And that's another thing. I don't like people breaking my anonymity. And boy, did my sister do it one time really big. And it was so embarrassing. I was in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, when we was on our cross-country trip. And all Dorothy knows is I travel a lot. She knows I go to the meetings. She's been to a few Al-Anon meetings. It's not for her, you know. She doesn't have a problem. Maybe she'd go now. She may not remember she doesn't have a problem. Oh, well. Let it go. Let it go. Anyhow, maybe the repetition would be good, you know. But anyway, we're there, and we're at a little convenience store, and I had on my necklace with my Al-Anon logo. And so as I'm checking out, the girl goes, "You're a friend of Lois?" And I said, "Yes, I'm a friend of Lois." And I said, "I'm Mary Pearl. Nice to meet you." And this little girl gave me her name, and my sister says, "Do you know who she is?" And I went, "Dorothy?" And she says, "This is the MERP." And the little girl goes, Dorothy says, "World famous speaker." Oh, geez. I said, "Go to the car." And we talked all the way to Idaho about that. And by the time we got to Vancouver, Dorothy went with me to a meeting. And the meeting, thank God, was on acceptance. I needed one really bad at that moment in time. And we got up there, and they had you sign a little book, and they said the topic was going to be on acceptance. And so if you wanted to share on acceptance, put a little check by your name. I wanted to listen. And so I'm there, and I did not check my name, and I just wrote down Mary Visitor. Dorothy went with me. She didn't want to stay in the hotel by herself. Sister of Visitor. After everyone who had a check by their name had shared, the chairperson said, I'm going to ask some of the people here who don't have, because we have some more time. And so she said, Mary, would you share? I said, I'm just here to listen tonight. And about that time, somebody turned around and said, are you Mary Pearl? And I said, yes. And she said, I knew your voice. I've got your tapes. And Dorothy said, see there, I told you so. But, you know, it finally, you know, I had to get through to her that that's not what it's about. We're a fellowship of equals. No one in this program is better than another person. Some of us have different jobs to do in the fellowship, but we're all equally important. No one is better than or anything else. No one's lesser than. We're all equals in this fellowship. And that's really hard for people who don't come to the fellowship to understand that. They want to know, you know, are you the president of Al-Anon, or are you the this or that? And it's like, oh, no, no, thank you. It's a thing where nobody runs it and everybody tries. Another thing, J.D. and I did our bit trying to do marriage counseling. He sponsored the guy, and I sponsored the girl. And with our help, in one short year, they were able to divorce. So we haven't done that anymore, you know. Okay, you know. I can't fix anyone but myself. And I need God's help all the time. All the time. You know, and the people who are closest to us, they lack, you know, we have a lack of objectivity where they're concerned. That's one of the things I think, that's the reason that we can't help people in our family. Other people have to help our family. We don't have credibility with people that we have damaged relationships with. They don't trust us. You know, it's like when I came in the program, I did not trust what J.D. said to be valid. He would say things and I'd think, liar. And I'd hear an AA person say the very same thing and I'd believe them. So that helped me to understand him and to get past that. Now, you have to be able to do something for good and do it for free. And if you don't get found out, it's really good. It's really good. And some of the things that I try to do is by having a positive attitude or a smile. I love to smile at people getting on the plane. I just love, because, you know, normally people getting on the plane are just, you know, we're running late, you know, it's crowded in here, I can't find a place for my carry-on. I like to smile at people. Just, if for nothing else, it drives them nuts, you know. I like to allow people the right to screw up in traffic without having to tell them about it. I like to be generous. I try to stay out of your business. I try to not to complain all the time when things aren't the way I want them. I do complain sometimes, but not all the time. One of the neatest ones is when you can keep your mouth shut when somebody else makes a mistake. Give them the right to make that mistake. I like to send cards anonymously, or little notes anonymously to people. And one of the things that I can do is I pray for others a lot, a lot. I pray, if I'm in the car driving along, God and I talk and I pray for people. You know, J.D. and I, we pray for people when we sit down together to eat in the morning and at night. We pray for the people that we love or other people that we don't even know. We have a little internet prayer chain that's sort of worldwide, and people send prayer requests, and we pray for those people. And it's really neat. Not repeating gossip. Better yet, not listening to it, if you can go that far, you know. I mean, well, sometimes, you know, if you know certain people are really prone to do that, and if you don't want to be a part of that, you can walk off. You don't have to stand there and listen to it. Because when you listen to it, it's really hard to let it stop there. You know, it really is. It's like that, I know something that you don't know. You know, don't you hate to be the last to find out something? Isn't that funny? Why? at least you found it out, you know, but I hate to be the very last to know. It's like there's a one-upmanship in it, you know. It's like you're dumb if you're the last to know, you know, that kind of a thing. And I like to live with a light touch. And I tease people I love. I tease people I love a lot. They always tell them at the group, if she's on you, she likes you, you know. Because I do. I like to play with people. And I've got the perfect playmate over here. JD is so good at playing. And he's dry about it. And he's sneaky and he's very creative, you know. I'm pretty out up front with it. But I came home from one of my trips not too long ago. And I'm sitting there and JD says, well, I think I'll go on to bed. And I said, well, good night. I'm really tired. I think I'm just going to chill out here for a while. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, this light hits my face. And I look, and JD's standing there in his underwear with a lantern on top of his head. And he's got his arms stretched out. And he says, I'm an angel sent by God. I'm here to tell you that God loves you very much. And so do I. But you may call me Monica. Crazy man. A crazy man. And then like in his yard sculpture that he does, I was fixing supper one night and the dogs were ripping through the house and all of a sudden JD came running from the bathroom without a stitch on. And he screams, there's an armadillo in the backyard. And he's down locking the pet door so the dogs can't get out. And I'm going, oh, my God, how did an armadillo get in our backyard? Our yard is fenced. How could that happen? I look out. Well, I don't have on my glasses. I look out. And by God, there is an armadillo in my backyard. And I said, don't go out there like that. And he said, I won't. I said, I'll get a broom or something and go scare that. I can't believe there's an armadillo in my backyard. And so I go tearing out there. And as I get close to the armadillo, I realize the armadillo's eyes are crossed. And there's a little hole there with a little scratch marks and everything, and it's a yard sculpture of an armadillo. He has set me up again. You know, one year I looked out and it was snowing. It was so gorgeous. And JD says, honey, do you realize your tulips are blooming in the snow? I said, well, they are. They are. My God, that's... I didn't even plant tulips there, JD. These little plastic tulips are stuck out there. And he can grow anything. And he gets a sweet potato, puts it in a little glass of water, and has this magnificent vine. I get a sweet potato, put it in this water, and I have a rotted sweet potato. It's like, what happened? And so I'm trying, you know, every year he would try and I would, and his would be flourishing and mine would be rotting as usual. And he said, honey, you've got leaves on your sweet potato. Really? I mean, I didn't notice I had leaves on my sweet potato. And I ran in there to the kitchen window and I looked and I said, my God, I do have philodendron leaves on my sweet potato. Another thing I've learned over the years is to be honest about what's going on with me to the people. Like when I share with y'all, when I'm not in a good place, I'll tell you, I am not in a good place. You know, I had the worst year of my life, the year 2000. I mean, it was. You know, and I'm, you know, I try not to have that program pride that says you can't tell them how bad it is because then they'll think the program doesn't work. That's crazy. The fact is the program's working. You're going to have hard times. You're going to have days you can't work it worth a shit, but the program works, and you'll do it as soon as you can. You know, I think it's real important. There's times like when I got to the point, it's like, why pray? Why bother? My life is just down the toilet. But what did I ask other people, pray for me till I can again. Pray for me until I can get back where I need to be. And I believe in the prayers and carrying people with the prayers. Because I think if I hadn't had the prayers, I couldn't have made it last year. You know, we all have these hard times that we have to go through. And I like doing things just because they're the right thing to do. It makes me feel good to do it. Tradition 12. Selflessness is the spiritual foundation of our way of life as marriage partners or friends. ever reminding us to place principles above personalities. And the principle is unselfishness. The greatest gift we have is to be of service to one another. And you can't do that and be selfish at the same time. There's no room for pride, selfishness, arrogance, managing, controlling, or whatever in our new way of life. We learn to place principles above personalities. It doesn't matter. You know, it's like don't discount a message because you don't like the messenger. Some of the people I have not liked the most have given me, usually I don't like who brings me the message that I need to hear. You know, that it's like, oh, that hurt. I don't want to hear that. There was a man that came from New York, from Albany. And he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went to this open AA meeting, and Ed was always there, and he had that, you know, that real annoying New York accent, the one that was like that. And I know Betty's loving this. She's sticking her tongue out at me. But all he would do is every meeting he would tell us how much more wonderful it was up in New York and how he liked it better in New York than he did down in Arkansas. And he would just keep going on and on and on. And finally one night I said, you really like it so much better up there? And he said, yeah. I said, well, what the hell, you go back. You know, I was just like, I had it with him, you know. Very next meeting, he says, God never puts on you more than you can stand, but you will. I needed to hear that. I didn't want to hear it from Ed, you know, of all people in the world. And so I thought about that, and then I went to Ed, and I made an amends to Ed. I said, you know, I wasn't being very kind, loving. I wasn't being tolerant. And I said, you can't help being who you are. I can't help being who I am. But you really helped me, and I want you to know that. And I'm going to pay attention to what you say now. Because it seemed like to me all Ed talked about was back up in the jungle up there in Albany. And it seemed like, I mean, that's what he would say all the time. But then if you get past that, he had some good stuff to share. And that's the thing. Everybody has good things to share. And Ed and I became friends. And I'm really glad. You know, Ed died of alcoholism. He had to go back out there, and he never made it. But Ed helped me. So, see, that's the thing you have to remember. Don't discount the message just because you didn't care for the messenger. We had a gentleman in our group named Larry. Larry just got on my very last nerve. I mean to tell you, he had a thing against the Catholic Church. Now, when I got here, I was anti-religion, but I was not as berserk. I didn't voice it like Larry did. And in every meeting, he would tell you how he hated his wife's priest. I'm thinking, you know, he probably don't care for you either, Larry. But he was very, I just couldn't, there was something about Larry. So I'm walking in the mornings, I'm walking, and I'm saying, God, I know there must be something in Larry that is like me for me not to like him that much. Because, you know, they always say you hate your defects worse. What is it about Larry that we have in common? Because I sure don't want to be like that. What is it? And as I'm walking along that morning, I go, oh, my God, not that. Larry is an opinionated asshole. I have found our commonality here, you know. You know, and so, you know, that changed my attitude about Larry. Larry didn't drive me nuts so much anymore. I could, you know, I could get in there and I could even listen to what Larry said. Larry was another one that left the fellowship. Unfortunately, Larry had had polio as a child. And to try to get his mobility, he was a swimmer. And he was a master swimmer. He swam like 5, 6, 7 miles every morning. But Larry was diabetic, and Larry would not manage his diabetes. I mean, it got to the point, we'd seen him go into so many diabetic comas, that we were all holding hands one night doing the Lord's Prayer, and we saw Larry going, we just finished the prayer. You know, he was on a first-name basis with the ambulance people all the time, because he just would not. It was amazing. The judge took his driver's license away for so many wrecks for going into diabetic comas. In, you know, the car, this kind of thing. And Larry went swimming one morning and they found him in the bottom of the pool. He had one more time not taken care of his diabetes. But you know, that was really sad because we like Larry, you know, and we missed Larry. But you know, people, this disease, you know, that's a denial. Whatever illness that you have, if you're in denial about it, it's going to be pretty bad for you. And he did not accept his diabetes well. And he had had it since he was a child. It was amazing. Humility means you're teachable. You know where your place is. You don't know everything. You know, Alma was a lady in our group I love very much, and she said, it's knowing your place before God, and you got to be teachable. If you're going to be humble, you got to be teachable. And that's true. Now, one of the ways that you can convey your message here in your selflessness is through sponsorship. I found it's been one of the neatest things. You know, I don't know what I have brought to the people I sponsor, but I do know what they have brought to my life. My life is so much richer. I remember a few years back, probably about 6 or so years back, I was beginning to feel a little stale, a little, you know how you get, maybe a tad complacent, that kind of thing. And this gentleman in Toronto asked me if I would sponsor him, and I said, well, you're in Toronto, and you've been around your whole life. I mean, he started Nelatine when he was like 12 years old, and he's almost 40 at the time. And I said, are you sure? He said, yeah. And then we got to talking, and he'd never really worked the steps. And I'm thinking, what were you doing all those years? And he says, I was around the program. Well, there's a difference between being in the program and around the program. And he says, and I will do anything you ask me to do. Oh, who could refuse that? You know, I mean, really, you know. But his willingness and his enthusiasm brought a new joy into my life, you know. Being able to see him grow and change, and the kind of things that he was able to do by working the steps in his life revitalized my life and my program, you know. It's amazing how that works. That's the reason we have to keep passing it on, because you keep getting it back when you're doing that, you know. And I've had more fun with my children of the Spirit. You know, I used to sit around and worry about, you know, when I die, I don't have anybody to leave anything to. You know, there's nobody there because I'm the last of our family. And I thought, wait a minute. I did my will. We did it again. We just updated our wills before we came on the ship. God forbid something should happen as to what would happen with my sister. But it was like I had under the special bequeath, I mean pages, you know, of my children of the Spirit, you know, of the things, you know. And I said, that is really neat to me. I have great, great memories. Jennifer and I have what we call runaway days. We just run away. We get in the car. We don't tell anybody where we're going, and we're gone for a day. And we spend special time. We have a lot of special memories there. I have this dingy little girl up in Ontario named Bonnie, and I had great fun. Bonnie has a swimming pool. She lives out in the country. And so she says to me, let's go skinny dipping. Says there's nobody here except us. And I'm going, out in the open air? And I said, what if a plane flying over? You know. And of course, like I say, I was much heavier then too, you know, when you're a lot more self-conscious about your body. And now I just have this thing with skin, you know. It's great fun, you know. You decide what to do with it. If you want to know how you get up in the morning, you know, if you roll socks, well, see, you can put on your bra. You just pick it up, roll it up, and stick it in. And I was out there, and so we went skinny dipping, and I found skin I didn't know I had. You know, did you know boobs float? Ha ha! The last time I'd skinny dipped, I didn't have any. You know, it's been since I was a kid. And I'm going, Bonnie, look, my boobies float. You know, it's like having a Mae West on around your neck. You know, they're right up here. But nowadays, you know, if I want the people say, show your tits, I have to go, okay. You know. It's totally different. I had a day at a spa in Las Colinas down in Dallas-Fort Worth area at the Four Seasons, and it's a really posh place with one of the girls I sponsored. And that was a real traumatic experience, because when you're a very large person to go to there, you know, you go in and the first thing they do is they strip you off nude and put you in this little terry cloth robe, and they send you to the holding tank. And there's where a bunch of the women are all waiting for the different procedures, and they have a big hot tub that's about the size of a swimming pool, and they have a cold tub. And these women are just taking off their little robes and walking around and in and out of the water. And some of them are very, very nice figures, and there's some that shouldn't be doing that. And there's like me who shouldn't be there at all. And I am hiding in a book. It's like it was more skin than I ever wanted to see in my entire life. And then they call your name and they say, you know, we're take you for your massage. And so I go down for my, an hour and a half massage. And I go down there and they say, Tim will do your, Tim! I mean, I go to hot springs. Women do women. Men do men. Men do not do women. Young, good looking, handsome young boys do not do fat women, you know, I mean, oh no. Tim is in his little short shorts, you know, and he says, I'm a graduate from Texas Tech, and he's giving me all his credentials, and I'm going, young enough to be my son, and he's going to get to do Moby Dick. Oh, I can't believe this. I can't believe this. And I'm going, he said, have you never had a massage? I said, yes, but not by a man. And he said, well, it will be all right. And he's trying to be very, very professional, but my brain is just, you know how our mind is? I am having more than a committee meeting. I am having a frenzy up here, you know. I get there, you know, and you're laying down. You got your face in there. I'm praying for everybody I know. Keep your mind off of this. Keep your mind off of it. Keep your mind off of it. I'm laying there, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's beginning to feel pretty good. You know, I'm going, oh, and it's one of those therapeutic where they really get into it things, you know. And then he just gets and he's getting down lower on my back. And I don't know why things come into your mind. You know how these old things go. And it just says, whatever you do, don't fart. And it's like, ah! That was the scream heard in my head. And he said, you got real tense again. I thought, no shit, you know. Oh, I couldn't wait for that to be over. I mean, it was the longest hour and a half of my life. You know, I was so uncomfortable. I really didn't enjoy that. But then I went back to the holding tank. By now, I can do anything. You know, and I got a facial and I got a manicure and all like that. And that was all great, you know. That was great. But see, that was one of the things that when you are extremely overweight is very, very uncomfortable. Now, I would, you know, I'd hate to see them doing skin like this, you know. But I would not feel as self-conscious about it. I would not be as self-conscious. One time, one of the other girls that I sponsored, we were going to a conference in Missouri. And on the way, we were passing through the little towns in North Arkansas, and one of the ladies in our group's mother had passed away. And she was from this little town, and I said, we could whip by and sign the book. And she said, why not? So we zipped off, now we have to find the funeral home. Well, in a little teeny town in North Arkansas, there's only one, you know. We go in, but they have three people. Which one is Hazel's mother? We don't know what the last name was, you know. So we said, could we see all of them? So we can determine which one might look like Hazel. And we found one that we thought resembled Hazel more than the other two. And we signed the book. Hazel was thrilled that we signed the book, you know. But that's just some of the little crazy, the fun, the freedom that you have. The freedom that you have, you know, giving and caring, you know. There's nothing like doing a fifth step with someone where they honor you and trust you enough to tell you about all of the secrets of their life, you know. The good, the bad, the ugly. That's such a neat thing, you know. Listening to one another. And then there's gratitude, which is honesty in action. Looking at my life honestly, concentrating on my blessings instead of the negatives. Taking God with me and trying to keep that conscious contact. You know, applying the steps and principles in my life. I started in my group and then with my friends. And unfortunately, the last place I was able to carry those principles was to my home. And that's because there was so much damage there. It was easier over here, but it helped me to get it over there. And it was when I could finally bring those principles into my home and work them there. That's when our relationship really began to change. I made a lot of progress over the years, but unfortunately, I'm still a work in progress. I'm not healed yet. My mother's family, like I say, they were all alcoholic, and they did some really fun things to each other. Like, you know, I had this one uncle, and we were all camping one night, and in the middle of the night, you heard a gun go off and a scream, and he had shot his big toe off. He thought it was a snake at the foot of the bed. I really loved him. He was so funny. He was shot in bed, actually, when he died. But he was there because he was with someone else's wife. But I love that drunk. Love that drunk. He was more fun. He was so exciting. And then there was Uncle Ernie and Aunt Mary May. Now, Uncle Ernie and Mary May lived next door to one another, brother and sister. And they would do things to one another. She had been married many, many times, and he had not. And they took away his driver's license. Permanently. And so she had a new car, and she said, "Can I use your carport for my new car since you won't be driving anymore?" He said, "Well, if you'll take me where I want to go when I need to go." And so she agreed. Well, you know already this isn't going to work. You know, they'll get drinking different times, whatever. And so she wouldn't take him when he wanted her to go. And so he evicted her from the carport, and she refused to move her car. So he took a gun and shot it. Well, this made her mad. And so she got even by doing things to him. And then he got even by burning a room off of her house. And just happiness, you know. And so then she got really mad, and she had him put in the sanitarium. He had had TB off and on. And so she called and reported him that he wasn't doing what he was supposed to be doing. And so they put him in. When they put him in the sanitarium, took away his alcohol. He died. So now we're out at the cemetery. And it's sort of sad when you go to a funeral that the only people there are three or four people, just the immediate family, my mother and her sister and Dorothy and me, You know? And I feel sorry for Ernie. Never did like Aunt Mary May too well. And Aunt Mary May, like I say, she had one husband in particular I really liked. And I always felt like she murdered him. And so she had this magnificent stone over his grave. You should have seen her the day of the funeral. It was one of those, you know, she cussed him out every day of his life, and she was draped over the coffin, you know. You know, just a big scene. And the stones showed their last name, his name, born, died, and the date, you know. And it says her name, born, and then the blank. And that you would bug her. So she had them take it off the grave because she didn't like looking at her own tombstone. And so for many, many years it was like that. But we're walking around waiting on them to bring the body that day. And Dorothy and I are. And I said, "Look, the stone's back on the grave. Not the little 3x5 card anymore." I said, "She's actually got the stone up. Wonder when that happened, you know." And I said, "Oh, God." And so I had this little Sharpie pen in my purse, and I filled in her date. Just for fun. I said, "Ernie, this one's for you." See, I'm not well. I'm not well. You should have seen her reaction. Yeah. The slogans are great. You notice the live and let live. If you don't live your life, you won't allow anybody else to live theirs. People who are at war with themselves can't be at peace with anybody else. You know, if you can't live your life, then that's your deal, you know, but you won't be able. And one day at a time is so important. I've never realized exactly how important till this last year, because sometimes 1 hour at a time was a big deal. You just do what you can do, you know. And pain seems to be a touchstone to growth. I don't know why that is. You know, it makes me willing to change. I always feel like, you know, we always bitch about letting go. You know, I can't let go. I can't let go. Well, if you ever water ski, you better learn to let go. Because the first thing you do when you fall, if you don't let go, you'll drink the lake. Been there, done that. You know, you do my little porpoise imitation, you know. Out there snitting along in the water, drinking the lake. It's resistance to the change that causes the pain. And fear is very painful. It will cause that resistance. When you don't trust in the process, and when you don't trust God, You know, and it's so silly, you know. You think you trust God, but you're afraid what God's going to do. And if you've got to realize that what God's going to do is better than anything you would possibly know. But it takes a while. We're just human beings, just human beings. You know, in the big book, it talks about trudge the road of happy destiny. What does trudge sound like to you? Sound like to me for years that you had your feet in mud, and every time you took a step, it went, you know. But that's not what it meant. I had this old dictionary I looked up. Trudge meant moving forward with a purpose. Moving forward with a purpose is trudge. And it's funny how the words change over the years, the meanings. And I don't have to be alone in my walk anymore. I've got all of y'all. I've got people all over this world. You know, there's a girl over in Africa that I talk to on a daily basis pretty much through the internet, you know. We are a worldwide fellowship. And we have one in India, and we have one in the Canary Islands, and what have you. And I can reach out and touch people. Say hi to Joyce or whatever. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, we're all in the same kind of thing. When you practice spiritual principles, we become of maximum service to God. Spiritual principles. And then you can enjoy life as you've never enjoyed it before. So it's just super neat. You know, I've met people from all over the world, literally all over the world. And what I've learned is we are so alike. We may speak with different accents. We may be of different colors, but we are all alike. And it goes back to what my sponsor told me in the very beginning. In here, we are hearts that hurt. And a heart that hurts has no boundaries. Absolutely no boundaries. I love to relax and I love to have fun. And here a few weeks ago, I was visiting Bonnie back up in Canada, and it was Mother's Day weekend. And when I got off the plane, I had on some pedal pushers. I had been to a conference in another part of Michigan and flew into Detroit. And she said, "Let's go have lunch." And when we pulled into this little restaurant, she said, "Get your suitcase out and put on a dress." And I said, "What?" She said, "Dress up." I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "Dress up." So I went in the bathroom. That's a really close place to change clothes, is in a bathroom in a Bob Evans. But anyway, I changed my clothes. I came out. We had lunch, and we drove, and she said, "Happy Mother's Day." And we went to see Phantom of the Opera. She had gotten tickets because she knows that's my favorite. And we went to see the Phantom there in Detroit, you know, just off the plane to lunch and see the Phantom. You know, I thought, isn't that neat? Isn't that neat? Am I not blessed? Am I not blessed? I have had some of the neatest things in my life. I have had wonderful program vacations. Sandy and Willie and JD and I have had many, many wonderful vacations. And it's amazing sometimes the things that we do. We were up in Yosemite, and we had a brain fart, you know. I fixed this wonderful meal of steaks and tossed salad and baked potatoes. And we're right by this wonderful babbling stream, you know. We were in the little Winnebago out there, and there was a little snow around the base of some of the trees. It was just so nice. I even made this wonderful homemade from scratch cherry pie, you know. And, we all got out to eat there on the picnic table, and fortunately, we didn't take the pie with us, but we put everything else. And then we immediately all sat down on the same side of the picnic table, slingshot our food, you know, over at the creek, you know.
Oh.
Laugh. We laughed. That was so much fun. You know, the thing is, life keeps happening. Life keeps happening. And some of the hardest things is to watch people you love go through those hard times. But they have to do what they have to do. You know, I was in Indiana, and Oma, like I say, was one of my grandbabies in sponsorship. Oma was in her 60s. She had had two open heart surgeries over the years and had tremendous allergies. Could have very few foods that she could eat, but she was an upbeat lady. You didn't hear her complain. You didn't hear her bitch. You know, she just went ahead and did what she could to the best of her ability. And we were always laughing about people getting monogram things because you never see anything with MERP. She said, "You never see anything with OMA either." Well, here it was. I was at my wedding anniversary, and J.D. was at home, and I was in Indiana doing a conference. And we went out to lunch that day to a German restaurant. And there was a plaque that said, Oma is the greatest. And I thought, my God, Oma's birthday's next Tuesday. Is this fabulous or what? And I went running back to the hotel, and I called J.D., and I said, J.D., J.D., you're not going to believe this. I have found a plaque that's got Oma on it. And he said, have you spoke yet? And I said, no. He said, well, call me back. I said, what do you mean call you back? Because that's not normal. And he said, well, I need to tell you. And I said, what do you need to tell me? And he said, they found Oma dead this morning. But, you know, the thing about it is, it was sort of like Oma was saying goodbye. You know, it was sort of like Oma was saying goodbye. I've had to let people I love go. Father Hillary was another, you know, a really good friend, and I had to say goodbye there. And then I had to watch Jennifer go through the hardest period of her life. We thought we'd gone through hard times because, like I said, we've known each other our whole lives. When she lost her mother, we thought that was the hardest. But we saw her marriage of over 30 years deteriorate, and that was very, very difficult. And to watch her suffer would damn near kill me. You know, it was really hard for me to be objective about him and not want to kill him when I would see how she was hurting. But, you know, I had to realize that he was very, very sick. But there's been some good things, too. And going through my mother's stuff, I found something that meant a whole lot to me. My mother had always told me how much my brother Bobby loved me. And I only remember seeing Bobby twice because I was so young when he got married and he was in the military and went away. And then I remember seeing him when he was on the troop train going to the West Coast to go to Korea. That's the only two things I remember. But I found all these pictures where he's holding me, and he and Dorothy and me, I look like I'm their kid, you know. And the family portrait looks like Mom and Daddy are the grandparents, and Bobby and Dorothy are my mother. It's amazing. I found all these pictures and going through mother. But my brother wrote to Mama the night before he was killed. And when he wrote his letter, down at the very bottom, he said, please hug and kiss that sweet little Mary Pearl for me. You know, and there it was. And see, my mother, who I thought that pack rat all those years, that meant, because see, her telling me Bobby loved me, it's like my brother reached out and told me he loved me by having it in his own handwriting. Something very, very special. J.D. told me when he asked me to marry him, he said, would you come grow old with me? And I said, okay. And so, you know, I've had to say, what do we do now? We're here. What do we do here, you know? You know, but we are growing older together, and there's a really sweetness to that. You know, I love him, and he's more special to me than he's ever been because he has been there. I mean, he just intuitively, he knows when that touch is needed or when that little hug is needed, and he's got a strength in him I didn't ever know was there. And I want to end with something that a friend of mine who's a priest told me. He said that he was over in India and stayed with Mother Teresa for a while. And he was debating whether or not to leave the priesthood. And he said, you know, Mother, he said, I want you to pray for me that I should have clarity on what to do about this deal. And she looked at him and she said, no, I will not pray that you shall have clarity. And he said, well, what do you mean? She said, I will pray that you should have faith. When you have faith and you trust God, you don't need to know. God will tell you. And you know, that to me is one of the best spiritual principles that I think I can leave you with, is when you need to know, talk to God, trust God, and God will tell you. And that'll help your relationship as much as anything in this world. And I thank y'all so much for coming on this cruise and enjoying this wonderful week with us. Bye.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.